93.7 WEEI. Rich Shurtleff, Ken Laird, Mr. Ted Johnson. You can call us at 617-779-7937. Stiz, were you a big LL Cool J guy? I hear this thing right here. When you were like learning rap, you know, how to... When you were first upcoming in the rap scene, did you respect LL Cool J?
Oh, yeah. When I was a young kid, I used to, you know, play LL Cool J songs, start them and top them so I could write down the lyrics. I'd wear, like, one of my pant legs up like LL. Yeah, LL was the man.
You walked around with one pant leg?
Yeah, that was an LL Cool J thing.
What was that about?
Yeah.
You know what's crazy is that, if I'm not mistaken, the first LL Cool J album was produced in Rick Rubin's dorm room at NYU.
Yeah, I believe you're right.
He did the whole thing in like this tiny ass room. He had a roommate and everything. He was just like a college kid.
Why are people
and he produced these amazing albums in his dorm room?
Rick Rubin either lost it or people were just like out to get him. He's like Jaylen Brown. Every time I see a story on him, it's like Rick Rubin is no longer the man.
What? Oh, really? People don't like Rick Rubin?
I don't know. It seems like
he's just kind of weird. He walks around with no shoes. His hair's all messy.
Like Matt Collins.
Hmm. Yeah. Hmm.
I don't know. The guy produced Run DMC and Slayer, and they made their best album. So you got to give the guy a little bit of credit. And Johnny
System
Cash.
System of a Down, too. Johnny Cash, yeah.
Yep, so many great bands. So good on him. Although I will argue that he ruined the Red Hot Chili Peppers because he told Anthony Kiedis that he could sing, which... He's not a good singer. All right. But he's a great rapper. The early stuff, he was very good. All right. It is Rich, Ken, Ted Johnson. We're in the Ketchus Law Studios. No fee unless you win. And Chad Tracy has been the revelation of this season. I think that once Craig Breslow decided to put his clankers on the table and get rid of Alex Cora, a decision that I think almost across the board most people thought was insanity. Like, especially at that, we're like, what are you doing at this time of the season? You're getting rid of Alex Cora. You know, how could this possibly be? This dude won a World Series here. And then in comes Chad Tracy, and with the same pieces, actually worse pieces because Roman Anthony was injured under his watch, this team has turned it around in a way that I can't remember a team doing anything like this. I mean, we've used the term historic in two different ways in the same season. They were historically bad a month ago. Like, how many times, guys, did we hear or even say, this is the worst Red Sox team I ever remember seeing?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was being debated 5 weeks ago.
Yep, daily.
Yep. And now we're hearing words like history once again and historical in this 15-game winning streak that they've gone through. And just how well they have turned things around is something that you'll remember for a long, long time. And I think a lot of that has to do with Chad Tracy. I'd like to give us a little bit of credit because from the beginning, I think we knew that this guy was good from when he stepped in studio and said, you know what, Rich, Ken, and Ted, you're the kind of guys that are going to bring me to the next level. And we did. You can always thank us. But what we're learning about him is, you know, he's got a very different method than what Alex Cora had with this team. And there was a caller earlier saying that maybe we've been giving Alex Cora a little too much credit for his time being manager of the Red Sox. I mean, it is pretty wild. When you look at the team that won, it was a juggernaut. I mean, I read you some of the roster. I had to go back and look, and once you see it for yourself, when you're living it, you're like, yeah, these guys are good. But Mookie Betts, J.D. Martinez, Xander Bogaerts, Chris Sale, David Price, Craig Kimbrell, Andrew Benintendi, Rafael Devers. I mean, dude, that lineup is insane.
Yeah.
That's like an all-star game. And then you take a look at, you know, maybe obviously he didn't have the best track record here because, you know, he lost for a lot of the tenure. I mean, he had multiple last place finishes mixed with one ALCS appearance. I don't want to crap on the guy, but I do think that it's a fair thing to look at is, you know, are we giving Alex Cora a little too much credit as being the genius that he was when he was here? You know, the guy had a track record of cheating, so maybe he was using a little bit of that. We don't know.
But even at a base, you could just say he was not quite a fit with this group, and Chad Tracy's a much better fit. But that doesn't mean as this team evolves that Tracy, to me, is 100% the slam dunk, the guy to be. I mean, if they start adding veteran pieces at the deadline and into next year, I don't know. Maybe there's another guy that fits better. I would just wait at least another month to see. If we've had two dramatic shifts already, we could have a third. You know, what if they lose 15 in a row or something like that? Then you don't want Chad Tracy to be have that interim tag off.
Why I tend to I agree with you too, Ken, is that it wasn't instantaneous when Chad Tracy took over. It wasn't like all of a sudden, boom, they turned things around. It took a while before they got things on track and with him at the helm. So I agree with you, Ken, on that. I would wait a little bit to have like a really just make my decision. And it doesn't feel like it's a foregone conclusion that Craig Breslow is coming back. A lot of people still think the trade deadline and how they finish is still going to determine whether Breslow keeps a job for next year. And if that's the case, obviously, if you get rid of Breslow, you're not going to retain Chad Tracy. At least that's how it, I feel like it.
See, I disagree with you. I think it did happen quick. Alex Cora was fired on April 25th. And think about it. For like the last, what, 3 weeks to a month, this team's been on fire. So let's go back to like maybe it was like the very end of June. When was the Yankee series? It was like, take a look. It was like the end of June. That's about 5 weeks.
June 25th, yeah. Tracy was 27-31 when they went on that when they went on the streak, because they went from 14 games back to 7 games back. So 27-31, it was almost 60 games.
He's a nice guy.
So let's say it took a little less than 2 months for everything to turn around from when Chad Tracy's shown up.
Yep.
Doesn't it take that long for the players to start trusting their manager, for the things that the manager is implementing to take hold, for you to get out of your old routines and get into your new ones, to get over the whiplash of having certain people there and then there's another one there? I mean, I would think 2 months is expeditious. Like, that is really fast.
But you're also saying that, assuming that Breslow didn't have influence over Chad Tracy when it comes to, you know, philosophy and how they did things, I just feel like it's more of a Breslow. Did you feel like Chad Tracy had all this power when he got up here? Like, he was the one that decided on philosophically how they were going to play and that kind of thing. I mean, the only thing I felt like he really had power over was the daily lineups, but everything else, I feel like that was more,
a little more small ball. Maybe do you credit Tracy for that? They've definitely bunted a little more.
I feel like that's a Breslow thing, man.
Could be Breslow.
I mean,
Breslow's just a pitching thing. I mean, that's all he is. That's all he cares about.
I think these guys.
Boy, if he's a general manager and that's all he cares about, that's a little scary.
I do think that he knew that this was a young group and that he protects them. And I think that they're a fairly sensitive group. We know that. God knows Jaren Duran is very sensitive. They have younger players which tend to be more sensitive than the older veterans. And I believe that he could speak their language. And from this article that came out in the Globe, it does seem like they all felt that they could be themselves. And, like, he doesn't call them out in public with the way Alex Cora did. Alex Cora is kind of bitchy. Alex Cora would begin with a press conference like, ooh, who was that shot at? Ooh, man, is it management or was that a
it's
player?
It's usually towards management. I think a lot of his ire was kind of directed, I think, subtly and passive-aggressively to the decision makers in the organization, not as much the players.
I'm sorry, Ken,
real quick. He also used to complain about like wanting other players, like, we don't, these are the players we got, you know. It's like he used to almost complain
thing.
Like,
definitely.
And how do you think that makes you feel if you're a player on the team?
Oh yeah,
but you might like that, like, if he's going to bat for you to go get other guys, especially at the deadline. Now, Cora didn't get results last year because he bitched they didn't get anybody good besides Dustin May. But do you think this team now is expecting Breslow to deliver something? Even though I know they're proud of the group they have and they've talked up the young guys that have come up here, now you need a little help, right?
I would think so, yeah. I mean, Ted, I got to think that they've earned it, right?
Yeah, they have. I just don't think this is the kind of group that's going to sit there and, if they don't get a big bat, you know, complain and bitch and moan, because these guys just, they're 4A players that were just called up. Who are they?
Contreras might.
Okay, there's one.
He's a nice guy.
I'm saying there's one, but I'm saying the overall profile of this team, I don't think is this veteran laden team that's been here for a long time, where they have the right to, I don't know, suck their thumb if Breslow doesn't do what they want at the trade deadline.
Hmm. Yeah, you have to think that right now ownership is looking at this, and their intention is, unless everything completely goes into the toilet and they do, as you said, Ken, a 15 game losing streak, Tracy's their guy, right? At the end of the season, they're most likely going to sign this guy, right?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they don't.
In fact, I would be a little surprised if they're good into September, if they don't take the interim tag off then. At that point, if you're like convinced you're trending toward a playoff spot, it's probably a good carrot to then stop dangling, right?
Yeah.
We believe in
this guy.
He's our guy.
That's actually a good time to do it, because I was joking about how if they gave it to him now, like right now, I would almost feel like it was a jinx. It's like,
Right. You know, it feels almost a little too soon. Yeah.
It does. But if you gave it to them, like if they make the playoffs, then that might be a good time to do it. You don't have to, but I could see that being the first appropriate moment to do it.
So wait till they clinch, like officially clinch. Not even like, you can't be like 10 games up and jinx it then. You have to wait till they officially clinch a spot.
It just seems like that would be the first appropriate time that didn't feel like they were setting themselves up for a colossal story of failure.
Right, right.
Like,
yeah.
Like the minute you gave it to them, they just got all fat and happy, and now they don't care anymore.
Yeah.
All right, 617-779-7937. The return of Tommy Curran to Rich, Ken, and Ted. That means football right around the corner, my favorite time of year. And Tommy Curran's got a lot of interesting things going on right now to talk about with his team. Gabe Backus, I don't know what the hell happened, who's wrong on that, who's right. The Christian Gonzalez situation, what to look for at camp that starts next week. We will talk to Tommy Curran in just 2 minutes. We'll be right back.